This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us on The Morning Run. You're here with Lin Mark, not Julian Ng, Kusu Chuang, and Sharitz Abdullah. Now, it is 7:07 in the morning, and we're going to take a look at how markets closed overnight. Now, trade wars fears abounded as the deadline for the rise in U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods inched closer. The Dow was marginally higher. The S&P 500 closed down 0.2%, and the Nasdaq also dropped 0.3%.
Now, moving on to Asian market, Nikkei fell 1.5%, as well as Hang Seng 1.2%. Shanghai Composite ended 1.1% lower. SDI was also down, and to no surprise, KLCI was down as well at 0.35%.
Okay, in China, Beijing's top trade negotiator, Vice President Liu He, is traveling to the US on Thursday and Friday for high-stakes talks. The White House said yesterday that China indicates it hopes to make a deal during these negotiations. America has said it will raise tariffs on $200 billion of Chinese goods to 25% from 10%, and that might kick in on Friday, so that's obviously roiling markets. And China, in turn, has threatened to retaliate this rise in tariffs.
Now, there's also been some trade data coming out of China. Their exports unexpectedly fell by 2.7% in April versus a forecast of 3% increase. Meanwhile, imports expanded by 4% compared to a projected slip. Now, those results highlighted that a global slowdown is weighing down China's growth instead of the other way around, at least for now. And months of policy stimulus has fueled a pickup in China's economy, although the re-escalating trade threats may dampen further effects.
Yeah, in an all-out trade war scenario, the IMF estimates that annual GDP could shrink by as much as 0.6% in the US and 1.5% in China. On the geopolitical front, both the US and Iran have made moves that could jeopardize the Iran nuclear deal. Iran announced that it will suspend implementation of part of the deal, namely the sale of surplus enriched uranium as well as heavy water. Under the deal, Iran is required to sell its surplus enriched uranium abroad rather than keep it.
So Iran said it would resume the sales after 60 days if the parties observed financial and oil commitments and opposed the sanctions. And of course, Donald Trump has ramped up pressure on Iran by saying that an executive order imposing sanctions in Iran's metals industry, which is its second biggest export earner after oil.
Now for some big picture analysis of global markets, we have on the line Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. Thanks for joining us, Vishnu. So the Reserve Bank of Australia held its interest rates. Bank Negara Malaysia cut its OPR, followed by New Zealand yesterday. So is all of this signalling a slowdown for the region?
I think by and large, the central banks are reacting to two things. One is there's a clear shortfall in inflation across the region, so that allows them to cut rates. But equally, as you rightly pointed out, I think there are lingering doubts about how long the soft patch in the global economy is going to last, as well as incoming evidence that there could be further turbulence, particularly if the global trade front is not sorted out. So for these reasons, I think they're calibrating the rates lower, but it always leaves us with the question how much lower rates can go and how much space they really have.
Now, Vishnu, China's April exports fell 2.7%, while import rose 4%, bucking economy's expectation. It's painted a mixed picture of the Chinese economy so far. So how do you expect Chinese market to react, especially considering the news out of the US?
Well, I think the perverse reaction, getting past the initial knee-jerk softening in the markets due to the fears of US ramping up pressure on China and tariffs, getting past that, the perverse reaction may be expectations for China to also double down on stimulus. So that could see some relief coming through at some point. So that is something that I think is being discounted at the moment, because if we recall after the March better PMI numbers, there was speculation that China would pull back a little bit on stimulus. So this is going to be a finely balanced thing. But overall, I think the initial reaction is going to be one of fears that, in fact, the US is or US tariffs are going to bite into China's growth, particularly the externally oriented industries.
Yeah, Vishnu, oil prices appear to be holding steady around the $70 mark amid American sanctions on Iran and Venezuela, and some analysts are expecting crude exports to fall to a little more than 500,000 barrels a day. What's your take on the commodity?
That's a good point. I mean, the holding steady in this case is not so much due to conspicuous triggers or an absence of conspicuous triggers, but rather due to too many triggers in the room. So I think on one side, they are looking at any adverse supply shocks from Iran, Venezuela, perhaps even Libya, and these remain big risks. Whereas I think the argument on the other side is that Saudi has got more than enough spare capacity to fulfill or to make up for the shortfall. The real question now, which I think will lead to some ups and downs in oil prices, apart from the demand story due to US-China, is also the fact the willingness of Saudi to rush into producing a lot more, given the lessons from just late last year when oil prices collapsed very quickly. So I think what that leaves now is perhaps oil consolidating around $65 to $80, depending on the headline of the day. And if geopolitics is ramped up, then we could expect oil to go a little bit higher. In any case, a little bit of a risk premium in oil should be priced in because of Iran-US tensions.
Thank you so much. And that was Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy at Mizuho Bank. And they expect oil to consolidate between about $65 to $80, depending on news on the geopolitical front. And I think oil is right now at $70.37 a barrel, if I'm reading that right.
Yeah, on the benchmark Brent crude price points. That's very important for Malaysia because a lot of our earnings and, in fact, our ringgit expectations are hinged on oil prices. And right now at $70 a barrel, it's not bad. But that's an uncomfortable interdependence.
Now, also, Disney has just a few hours ago reported its second quarter earnings, and they beat earnings expectations, reporting an EPS earnings per share of $1.61 US dollars versus the street expectation of $1.58 per share.
So the company also reported a 14.92 billion in revenue for the quarter. So Disney stock price up more than 22% since the beginning of 2019, with a market cap topping $240 US billion. All this in part due to the success of the Avengers Endgame movie. So no spoilers coming up.
Actually, the spoiler ban has been lifted by the Russo brothers on Monday.
Is that so? Really?
People have. So if you are a social media user and you still haven't seen the movie, you may want to stay away.
So I saw the movie and I've ascertained without any doubt anymore that actually his name is Thanos and not Thermos. But I think
you were the only person in doubt of that.
Deliberately, some might say. But I think Disney also spent a lot of the earnings call with analysts yesterday convincing the street that their entry into Disney Plus, which is a streaming service designed to compete directly with Netflix, I think $6.99 a month is not going to break the bank at Disney. That's clearly one of the biggest strategy shifts in decades, if not, you know, half a century.
Yeah. Yep, and it's going to be luring in people with exclusive content from all its major franchises. So both Marvel, Pixar, as well as Star Wars content, and Avengers Endgame will also start streaming on Disney Plus on December 11th.
So those are big money franchises, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are famous. A lot of the well-known movies that make a lot of money are coming from Marvel and Star Wars as
well. Yeah, Disney is the biggest franchiser in the world at this point.
Yeah. At the same time, I think there's Fox, who has been acquired by Disney, which sold its movie and studio business and also reported their results. So earnings also exceeded expectations. Fox reported earnings per share of 76 US cents versus analyst expectation of 66 cents. Third quarter sales totaled $2.75 billion, beating Wall Street estimate of $2.61 billion.
Yeah, I think what Fox doesn't have that Disney has is, of course, theme park earnings. And, of course, Tokyo, Hong Kong, California, I think a couple of Florida as well. I think those did really well. I think up 15% or $1.5 billion. But also Disney had some bad stuff with regard to Vice Media. You know, Vice, you guys watch Vice on YouTube, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they took a $353 million charge on Vice Media.
Yeah, at the same time, I think what's appealing about Fox is that they're focused on live TV-centric content, which is on sports, news and entertainment, which I think is a gap within the video streaming business at the moment.
You know what? I can't wait for live premiership football games. I don't want to be tied in to Astro anymore, and I would pay. I mean, I would gladly pay for like Wimbledon finals. For example, the PGA Golf Major starts later this month. I'll pay for that as well.
Yeah, because right now that's, I think, one of the main reasons that people are still subscribed to services like Astro, because they stream, they have sports content.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
And of course, it is also May 9th today, so the 1 year anniversary of GE14. Now, after a short break, we're going to come back to take a look at the economy of Pakatan Harapan in the year since GE14. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.